going to write some psukim on the board. Let's see how good we are at showing the different ways to see to approach a problem, right? Torah, this, I'll try to choose some events in these parshios that we're reading now, so that we're sort of on board. This week's parsha is Vayishlach, so let's do some psukim in Vayishlach. It says that when Yaakov finally met up with Esav, you all with me so far? He showed Esav the gifts he was giving him, and he presented his family to them, right? So it says he presented his wives and his 11 children, his 11 sons. Got it? Okay. So to ask the question, Dina, actually it's Vidina, puts the vav in there, it's like a sanu, Vidina, Heichan Haisa, where was Dina? It says he presented Esav with his 11 sons. Where was Dina? So to ask the question is a function of, I think it may be fair for everyone to ask the question. Okay. Anybody know the answer to this question that's given by this particular parshat? Yes?
Yaakov was hiding her.
Dina was in a box. Okay. All right. She was hidden. Now, this appears in Medrash Rabbah. It appears even in the Gemara. All right. Okay. It's. I guess hopefully everyone in the class can figure if you're not only going to take note of the fact that she's missing and say why she's missing, and then go to the next step. What would be a next step to do from there? Which is why I think this parshan does this in the first place.
Tell us where she's hidden.
Do you really care about that?
Why she's hidden.
Yeah. Why she's hidden. And then he even goes to another level. Alright, first, I know this. She's not there. Two, let me tell you why she's not there. Right? Three, I'm going to another step. What are the consequences of the fact that she's not there? Someone called me this morning with he said he was so distraught over reading this parash. This morning, he calls me before I left, and I'll know in 3 minutes why he's so distraught. All right? Okay? So, it says that he presented his 11 sons to Esav. Okay? So, remember one of the five things that we learned in Rashi. Which one of those five would be at play here? When Rashi brings drash, the text must be significant. The text should be consistent. We should read the text closely. It should fit the meaning of the words. We call that mashma'ut. And little icing on top of this cake is the homily, the message. This short one-line commentary in Rashi is going to hit the trifecta. All right? So the first question is this a inconsistency? Why doesn't it say that he presented his 12 children or his 11 sons and daughter or Dina? Probably more accurate to say, and he presented Esav with his 11 sons, but it will be told to him. Right? Okay, but what would be the scientific thing to do if that's what's bothering you? What would be the... And when someone has to have the responsibility when you're writing a paper that you hope some people will read and not throw away and say, no, I don't like what you're asking. I'm not going to read you anymore. What do you have to do if this is an issue? Yes, what do you say?
No, I was going to ask him before.
Okay, come back to that. Right? Come on. Let's see some other places where there is a situation like this. Right? Okay? So, there are plenty in the Torah, right? I'm sorry to say, I know I'm talking to the male species here, but I'm sorry to say that in the Torah, in Bereishis, especially in Sefer Bamidbar, women are not counted separately. It's not. Right? That I should notice that Dina's not here. Following? So on the face of it, I'm not sure if this is an inconsistent text. Yaakov has 12 children. Why is he only showing 11 to Esav? Right? The answer is, look throughout the Torah. There's a great pasuk in Divrei Yamim. It says, this man had many sons and daughters, and here are their names. And it only lists men's boys' names. Get it? Well, you like it or not, that's the Tanakh. All right, that's that period. The Sumerians, the Babylonians, and the Egyptians did it that way too. Okay, only men are counted in Bamidbar. You got it? Okay? You hear it? You know, you want to flip a coin 70 times and see what are the likelihood that 68 of them are going to fall in heads and two on tails? You know what that is? You don't have enough zeros in this to fit in this room to make such a declaration. And you're telling me that Yaakov had 70 children and 70 descendants and 68 were boys and two were girls? Right? Just Dina and Serach bas Osher? Osher was the only son of Yaakov with anything but a boy? Right? There's even a Medrash that says that each of Yaakov's children were born together with a girl. Have you heard that? So why aren't they counted? So, in other words, this is not a problem of consistency. So, who's the kind of person who might ask the question, where is Dina? Right? Where is Dina? Why didn't he present Dina? The answer is, he did present Dina. It's just women aren't usually mentioned separately. What kind of parish is the kind to answer such a question? What? Rashbam. Ibn Ezra. Right? The fact is, they don't even care to ask the question. It's so obvious. I don't have to write obvious things for my readers. Right? Okay? You all with me on this? Right? But, okay, if you respect Rashi, you might ask his question and then show, you know, there's really no question here. Okay, you all with me so far? Yes.
Well, you said that Dina was one of the two women included in the 70.
In a separate list, correct.
So maybe something about, maybe it's not a question of including women, but Dina,
okay.
She's included in
the list. I accept. That's a limud zchus for Rashi for noticing this and saying, wait a second. You count Dina in a separate list, she makes up the number 70. Why isn't the Torah mentioning her here? So I will explain. I'll say. Well, why was he hiding her? Now, this is where Rashi goes beyond Parshanut. Which one of these fives is most likely what Rashi's doing? What? It's not an inconsistent text. Women are usually not counted in a separate list. But then, Mr. Pava points out, but she, Adraba, pro contraire, she is counted in a list. Right? Okay, so why not mention her here? Right? Okay, so come on, which of these? So it's jumping out at you. Which one is it?
Closely.
It's closely. We're reading the text closely. Rashi does this all over his perush. God tells Moshe, take Zakenim with you and talk to Paro and demand the release of my people. Right? You know where this is going? What does it say when Moshe goes to Paro the first time? Ve'achar ba'u Moshe ba'aron el Paro. Ve'yomer shlachas anili. Right? So who's going to notice that? Wait a second. In Perek Gimel, Pasuk Yud Ches, it says, take the Zakenim with you to Paro. Don't go alone. Go with an entourage. And when they go, Nebuch. It's just two people. What? So who's the kind of parish that's going to say, of course there's a Canaan there. They're just not mentioned separately because Aaron and Moshe are the main guys. You all with me, right? Who's going to say that? So Rashbam doesn't even mention it. Ibn Ezra says that. He says, Yesh Omrim, that there's a Canaan, slipped away one by one, and they were afraid to to show up before Paro. So when Paro saw Moshe, he said, you're a Nebuch. You can't even get your own people to support you. Get out of here. Medrash says, why didn't you just kill them on the spot? He said, no, you know what? I'm going to use these two fools, and I'm going to make their people hate them. I'm going to make their lives more difficult, and I'm going to have more people killed because of them. I'm going to take away the straw and let the Jews forget forever the idea of someone redeeming them. Right? He's using a live Moshe as someone who is better for them. Anyway, point is that it's Rashi who says, and where were the Zakenim? So again, in this case, Rashi says they were hidden, or they left, right? Zakenim left. Rashi tells you, why did they leave? And three, most important, this is so crucial. What are the consequences of them leaving? You ever hear that? Written in the Rashi. No one remembers this Rashi? Ever hear the consequences of the Zidin? First of all, why this came up? I just mentioned. They didn't feel, they thought that if Paro sees them show up, right? That, it just reminds me. I remember, it was about 20 years ago, maybe even, I know exactly how many years ago. Goodness gracious. Almost 27 years ago. Why you threatened to close Bernard Rebel Graduate School. They said there's no money, it's a money eater, and it's not worth it. So a few professors and teachers in the school, we stormed the grounds to fifth floor, and we were going to make a protest, you know, like you just can't do this. So they wanted more and more teachers to join this protest. So as I'm coming upstairs, and leaving my office, the phone rings in my office, and it's my wife who's hysterical telling me that the nurse who was watching our fourth child, who was just born, so I know exactly when it was, locked herself out of the door, and my wife was in Brooklyn, and you have to run home. We have a newborn baby who's alone in the house. Of course, we fired this nurse right away, but he's locked alone in our apartment. And I remember running out of here to get the door open. Luckily, I had my keys with me, right? And I didn't end up going upstairs. So I heard afterwards that the president of the university was very upset with all the teachers who showed up. He said, listen, this is what we got to do. You can't second-guess the university, right? So I meant to be there and stand up with the, you know, the protest, and I never made it there, right? Because I had to fly home and open the door for my son, who just got his master's from Bernard Rebel Graduate School. That's funny. That's funny. Okay, so just defended his thesis. Okay. Anyway, that's the story. So the Zakenim slipped away one by one. What's the consequences of that? Surely you can't just tell me that the Zakenim just... So what? It's consequences. When Moshe went up to Har Sinai, Hashem tells Moshe, tell the Zakenim to stay down there. They don't get to go up. Right? So Moshe said, so what would have happened? The Zakenim would have been able to go higher up and get a better seat. A better seat at the concert. Right? Instead, they had to sit with everyone else. Okay. See, Rashi is so clever and so good at recognizing these and putting it into his perush. Now, this particular one is, again, Medrash Rabbah, but he puts it into his pshat perush. He didn't need to tell us what those consequences are, right? This is what convinces me that Rashi is more than just a parshan, right? If your job is just to tell your readers what is the Torah saying? What do these words mean? What's the pshat and occasionally what's a drash if necessary? Right? What does this mean? Okay? It's more than that. What are we learning? So this is Nechama Leibowitz is very big on this. I'm sure you've used her on occasion in studies on the parasha, right? All right? Nechama Leibowitz and the previous, I guess, the last Lubavitcher Rebbe, who wrote many, many treatises on Rashi. Hundreds. Full pamphlets on Rashi. It's his conclusion as well. Rashi is certainly a parshan, but he's the homily is very crucial for him. So, what are the consequences of Yaakov hiding Dina? You mentioned it. What were the consequences? This is why my congregant called me distraught today. Rashi writes, yes, you know?
Maybe, she could influence Esau.
Beautiful, yes. That's actually what the Darshanim say in the Drushes about this. Wait a second. Esav is the grandson of Abraham. He's the son of Yitzchak. He's the son of Rivka, right? He's the brother of Yaakov, the patriarchs and matriarchs all around him, and that couldn't get him to become anything but Esav. But a good woman would. A good wife would. Right? It's interesting. Okay. But more than that. This is why that wouldn't dismay my congregant. What made my congregant distraught? What comes at the end of that Rashi? Vayecha Yaakov. You didn't want to give over your daughter to a man who was circumcised. She'll be taken by someone who's not circumcised. Is that man? Sure. Right? So this is why he's distraught. He says, how could the Medrash and Rashi, you don't have to record such a Medrash in your Pshat Perush. Just say Dina was hidden because Yaakov didn't want her to come across all of Esav's 400 men, and who knows what they might do to her. And leave it at that. Why do you have to be such a homilist every time? Right? You ever had a joke? One time Rashi and his wife were going to a wedding, and his wife said, Rashi, what do you think of my dress? Which is all there's always one answer to that question, guys, when your wife asks you that question. So what do you think of my dress? I think it's a little too showy. So she says, must you comment on everything? You asked me. What do you want me to say? All right, so Rashi didn't have to say what are the consequences of Yaakov hiding Dina. This is when he's destroyed. So Yaakov, you get consequences, but your daughter has to get raped because you hid her from Esav? What kind of marriage is that? So this is what I told him. I said that, the way I read this Medrash and Rashi is that there was a decree of fate. She was fated that this should happen to her. What Rashi is saying is that it happened to her from an uncircumcised man. Circumcision was very, very common in ancient world, by the way. The Egyptians were circumcising at this time. How do I know that? They have many, many descriptive look like these halls and these caves that we found showing mass circumcisions of males in the open, in front of a lot of people. It's like in a stadium, in a hall. They're circumcised. They're circumcising adults.
Why would they do it?
Because they're circumcised. I don't know. At a certain age, they're circumcised.
Is that a known thing?
I think so. Not every age, not every dynasty in Egypt did it, but quite a few did, and it's not unique to Abraham. I'm not saying that they did the circumcision exactly the same way, but circumcision is not unique to Am Yisrael, right? As it is now even. What's unique to Am Yisrael is that it's on the eighth day of Eretz after being born. Right? You ever Google this? You ever hear vitamin K? What does it do?
Potassium.
What? Potassium. Vitamin K is a plasma. Your vitamin K is practically nil when you're young. It starts to rush in the first few days. It spikes to the highest level of your life. If everything is normal for 99.9% of the people on your eighth day of life, and then it levels out for the rest of your life, except if you're hemophiliac nebus or something like that. Right, so I'm just saying, circumcision is not unique to us. On the eighth day, it's unique. Okay. All right. Be it as it may, if you're a person of faith, you don't look for things like this. These are because there are plenty of things that you'll find like this that contradict things that are in the Torah. Right? I'm not looking for it. I don't look for those things, and we don't use them to anchor our faith. All right. The point is that what Rashi is saying is that I'm a close reader, But when I read texts closely, I like to give the consequences of those close readings and always look for the homily at the end. Okay? Another one in this week's Parsha Des. So you see all these answers? She's hidden. She's not there. Why is she hidden? And what are the consequences of him hiding her? Those are perfectly Rashi-esque kind of things to do. A Rashbam kind of thing to do might be to give respect to his thought, to his grandfather, by asking the question, right? You got it? And then showing that it's not a question by saying, no, there's so many other places where women just aren't counted. Or remember the pasuk I just mentioned in Divrei Avim? And this man had many sons and daughters. Here are their names. And it only lists the boys' names. Right? Got it? So, and you can use many other examples in the Torah, in the Tanakh. Right? An Ibn Ezra kind of thing to do is just to not even comment on it at all. Got it? Right? A few other examples of this sort. Another one comes right in this parsha. Listen carefully. It says that 400 men joined Esav. 400 men joined Esav to meet Yaakov. This messenger who tells him that does not tell him why the 400 men are meeting him. Right? And if I'm in the story, I'd ask, you know, were they carrying swords and spears and torches and shields, where it looked like they were coming to war or battle, right? The Perush, I prefer best incorporating 30 Rishonim. There's some kind of combination of Sforno, Bechoshor, that Esav did not come out there that day to kill him. But he did come out there with those 400 men to, let me finish my sentence for me, to show you that I could. Right? Now, Bechoshor says that Rashbam says he came out there to honor him, show him respect, coming out to greet you. Remember, by Yishlach Yaakov Malachim, he's coming home, he's not coming trying to come home surreptitiously. Yaakov sends ahead. Now, it could be I'm going to run into him anyway, I might as well, you know, let him know I'm coming back. Right? Mom said, wait for his anger to cool off. Right? Right? She said it would be just your mima chodim. V'shalachticho l'kachticho misham. I'll send for you. She never sent for him. Right? 20 years she doesn't send for him. And it says when he comes home he's reunited with his father. Where's his mother? Another such example. Anyone have an answer for that? It says he came back home and he was reunited with his father. Why not his mother? It says Yitzchak buried his father because Yitzchak outlived his mother. Obviously, he outlived his father, but by the time his father died, his mother was dead already. It's obvious. But when Yaakov comes back after not seeing his parents for 20 years, why not say he came back to see his father? His mother's dead. That's what they, right? Okay? Fine. But these 400 men, this is a very, very sharp perush of the double expression. Let's look at this one. Vayira, vayetzer lo. Who cares about explaining why the Torah uses two expressions to define what Yaakov was worried about that day? Come on, talk to me, please, here. It's Rashi, right? It's probably close reading. It's certainly not an inconsistent text. Maybe significance. Why are you telling me he feared and was distressed? If you're a Rashi-esque kind of parish, what do you have to do with this? Show two different things he's basically worried about, right? You ever hear this? Golda Meir quoted this Rashi at the UN once. Doesn't give it away? Vayira Shema Yehoreg. I fear that I will be killed with my family. Vayetzelo, but in addition, I'm distressed. Shema Yaharog, because I may have to fight back and kill someone else. Did you hear the statement she made? can forgive the Arabs for killing my children, but I can't forgive them for making my soldiers kill theirs. Right? Okay? That's Rashi. It's famous Rashi. Again, it's from the Medrash. I told you already, 99.9% of Rashi's is a rehashing of a Medrash. He tells you when he's saying something original. Maybe two or three in all of Sefer Bereishis, and one is in this week's Parsha. Is an original Rashi. We still have not found an older source of this Rashi. If you have time at the end, I'll tell you what it is. Okay? All right? Comes the Chizkuni to say, no, I'll tell you why he has two things to worry about. Vayira, yeah, I'm worried my brother may come to me and do something bad to me. I have to prepare for the worst. That's a good way of living your life, guys. Prepare for the worst, expect the best. Okay? But prepare for the worst. Got it? So Yaakov is preparing for the worst it could be that he's going to kill my women and my children. Tami Aim Al Bonin. You just read that this morning. Right? So comes the Chizkuni to say, I'll tell you two things he's worried about. His mother said, this is all very close reading now, his mother said that your brother is waiting for your father to die, and then he will kill you. If he's coming out to kill me, that's very distressing. But, oh no, does that mean that, you get it, that daddy's dead also? Right? Mom never called for me. That's distressing. Right? But what does it mean if he's coming out, either he changed his mind and he wants to kill me anyway, but okay, I accept there's other mafarshim that say he doesn't want to kill him, but he's trying to show him that he can. Rashi says that he wants to kill him. He meant to kill him. Did you hear the famous, I remember learning in third grade in Kibbutz Shisha, right up the block. I went to that school up there. It was called Shiva Salvation. Now, Chotinsky said this. And she said, he came up to hug him and he tried to bite his neck off. And God made Yaakov's neck turn to marble. And his teeth fell out. And those are those little dots on top of the word by Yishol Kedem. Right? And we said, wow! Right? So, what is Rashi doing here? Why is he doing this? Why is he saying that? Read deeper. Who's Esav to Rashi in the year 1100 in France?
Rome.
Christianity. Right? Okay, Rashi wants to give his readers some space. Life for Jews in France in the year 1100 was such a Gehenna. It's the Warsaw Ghetto, right? You hear me? Rashi lost grandchildren in the First Crusade. Okay, so Rashi's trying to tell his people, Esav today wants to kill us. But we will survive. We'll outlast. We'll make it to a better day where Jews can study what I'm writing with freedom. They don't have to worry that they're going to kill us because of what we write. Right? Okay, that is, I think, what's going on with those kind of Rashis. Because really Rashi? That's right. Esav Soma Yaakov. That's Rashi's derech. Right? Sforno has a very cute thing. He says Esav wanted to kill him. But how do you think? Can anyone want to just give a... How did Yaakov appear to him? He bows seven times. But he's also... Remember, he's limping. Why is he limping? I've had two hip replacements. I can tell you why he's limping.
He followed the angle.
Yeah, it says he dislocated his hip. He's limping. Oh my goodness, Esav says, look at that Nebuch. He's my twin. He looks 40 years older than me. Right? I'm going to fight him, and I'll write in the papers, Esav kills limping younger brother. That's not a fair fight. It says that Yaakov's limping is what convinced Esav, what do I have to fight him for? Well, who am I fighting here? It's not a fair fight. I'll let him go.
It'll be a fair fight either way.
I know Yaakov may have had hundreds of men too, with following. I don't know.
It's just Esav was considered like the guy.
I'm just saying what the Sforno says. I'm just saying, these guys are writing, I think, with deeper things in mind. Right? Christianity, who are you fighting here? A small little... Sforno is living at the time of the Inquisition. Just just before the expulsion. Right? Still movements. Ravenel was still feverishly working to convince them, what do you have to fear from us? Why do we have to, you know, the last day he was trying to convince Ferdinand and Isabella to, just a limping people. What are you afraid of? That we're going to convert all your people to Christianity? You're the one converting us. Let us stay. Think, you know, things like, Sforno lived in Italy. I'm making a stretch that he... Sforno's name of a city in Italy. That's why it's called that. Most people think that was his name. Maybe it was called Ovadia. And it's wrong. All the English books, Sforno with an F. The name of the city was Sforno with a P. So, all right. Sapers, oh no, very nice. But he was very popular. We got his way into the Mikros Gadolos. He's an excellent parish. Really, you should. And he's always so concise. It's two or three lines, and they're always deep and packed. Okay, let's get back to our point here. Is that this Bayira Vayetzer Lo is really, again, it's more of like a close reading. Why do you have to give me two different words to define how Yaakov feels here? Right? It's a Rashbam kind of thing to say, come on, that's just biblical parallel. This is the way the Torah talks. Right? Ibn Ezra the same. But Rashi has to give... By the way, I think I might have told you some weeks ago, I'm not sure if I used this example, but sometimes Rashbam or Ibn Ezra admits this is so totally extraneous that even I am going to explain the close meaning of it. Remember the example I think I gave was when Rivka is described, when we first meet her, as a besula asher lo yidoa ish. Okay? There even Rashbam admits that there's no reason for the Torah to tell me what a besula is. It's a word that appears already before. Right? It appears in Parshas Vayera when Lot tells the men around the door, goes, listen, I have these daughters, besulos. I'll give them to you. Just leave these guests alone. The word appears. Do I need a pasuk to tell me what a besula means? You get it? Alright? So here, even Rashbam says that besula, we know what that means. Ashalido ish means she didn't even have a boyfriend. She never, no man ever even made a pass at her or kissed her or held her hand or anything. Right? Okay. All right. Okay. So that's a Rashbam, what I just said. Okay. Rashi, you know, anyone know what Rashi does here? Right. What's interesting is Ibn Ezra on this pasuk says, it's just the way of the Torah to say the same thing two different ways. And we shouldn't be writing explanations like I've seen in biblical commentaries. What do you mean? We shouldn't be writing explanations like what I've seen in biblical commentaries. And what Rashi writes on this? Come on. Rashi's parish is, Besula, we know what that means. Kedarka. Asher lo yido ish afilu shelo kedarka. Right? He didn't take her from the front and he didn't take her from the back. No man. Something other than that, maybe. That's what's left in Rashi. Right? Okay, but Rashbam understands this to mean more than Rashi. You see, when Rashbam feels the text is extraneous and we have to read closely, he outdoes Rashi. You get me? He does even better than Rashi. Because Rashi leaves the door open for other things that she might have done with a man. Get it? And Ibn Ezra looks at it and says, no one should write in a biblical commentary such things. And you know what? When Ibn Ezra writes that, you wonder, what is he talking about? Unless you read Rashi first. Okay? All right. Okay, so let's go back to those 400 men. It says that 400 men went out with Esav to greet Yaakov. And when those 400 men, it doesn't mention them again. It says, and after Yaakov and Esav parted, it says Yaakov went back to his home. And Esav went back to Har Seir. So who's going to ask? And by now, I hope you're at least with me here. Who's going to ask, what happened to the 400 men? Right? What happened to these 400 men? So what does Ibn Ezra say? Doesn't ask the question, because it's obvious what happened to them. You knew what? He also went back. But it's not, the Torah doesn't have to say. And Asa went back with his 400 men back to Harsay. The Torah doesn't have to say there's a Canaan war with Moshe and Aaron. The Torah doesn't have to say that Avraham gave the bread to the angels. Remember what I'm talking about there? When Avraham first saw the three men, he said, "Let me bring you some bread and I'll get water for you." Right? Bechopas lechem. A few psukim later, when he brings out food, it says he brings out the kitchen sink, but there's no bread. Right? Here, I'm not sure, Rashi just says, avolechem lo hevi. He didn't bring out bread. And there Rashi feels the need to also say why. Just say that, well, if you're going to notice that bread wasn't brought out, you've got to have a reason. Right? Rashbam on that pasuk says, of course it doesn't say in the later pasuk that bread was brought out. Tell me why. You ever go to a restaurant? Tell me why.
It's a given.
What?
It's a given.
It's a given. They got bread right away in the beginning. This took a half hour, an hour to prepare the food. And when the food came out, it was already a basket of bread and then some vinegar and some dip and some stuff on the table. Right? So it doesn't have to say in the second pasuk, so you brought out bread. That's assumed. Got it? But Rashi, the close reader, doesn't assume. Okay, got it? Okay. So let's get to the 400 men. Rashi says they are... But do you understand that Rashbam at least gives Rashi some respect by explaining why the Torah doesn't say bread was brought out in the second place? You got me? Ibn Ezra just leaves it alone. And Ezra says, I'm not going to explain this. Okay. In the negotiations for Rivka to come home with Avram's servant, right? In the negotiations... Who are the people that Avram's servant has to impress to take the girl home? Parents. He wants to go to someone's house, a stranger, and take a girl home. How do you do that? Well, you better have lots of money, right? So he gave her 10 gold pieces. 10 gold pieces is 3 or 4 years' salary at the time. What are you guys expecting to make when you leave this place? $40,000, $50,000? You're giving $200,000 to a stranger and then two bracelets and a gold beka? Right? Okay? I don't know. What are you making when you leave this place?
$1 million.
$1 million a year. Okay. That's after graduate. All right. So. So he gave lots of money and he gave gifts to the family and he said, there's more where that came from if you let her come with me. Alright? So okay, so he did a good job. But the people he's negotiating with are, yeah, no, remember? The girl's mother, the girl's father, and the girl's brother. That's Lavan, Bisuel, and Milcah. Okay, these three women.
Why does he have to talk to her brother?
Not only does she talk to the brother, the brother's mentioned first. Vayomer Ochiha Ve'Aviha. It says in one of the Vayomer Ochiha Ve'Aviha. So we already see that the father is sort of in the background. At the very end, when the negotiations are signing on the bottom line, right, it says, Vayomer Ochiha Ve'Aviha. At least in the first pasuk, it said her brother and her father. When the story ends, it just says her brother and her mother. So someone says, if you ask, also with the father, it's cute, Ubisuel Heichan Haya, same question as this. So you already know who asks this question. Ubisuel Heichan Haya, where was Bisuel? So Rashi's kind to us. He doesn't give us all the gaudy details. It says, Bisuel wanted to hinder the proceedings, so an angel came and killed him. Got it? Bisuel wanted to hinder the proceedings and say, no, I'm not happy with this deal. You gave her these gifts, that's hers, she's staying. Alright? Not happy with the deal. But so an angel killed her.
So why was the brother mentioned first?
So Ibn Ezra says, of course Bisuel was there. It's just that he was looking, he was texting while they were talking. He was doing his own thing. He was playing backgammon with someone. He wasn't interested. He was a Nebuch. The man of the family was Lavan, the son. That's why it says Achiha in the first pasuk. And then he said, okay, they're taking care of it. I don't need to be here. Right? Let me tell you, I'm, when it comes to wedding preparations, I've always been the same. I just have to write the checks. But I say, you think I care what kind of flowers you have? You think I care even care what kind of band? Or even where the wedding is? I don't really care. If the bride wants it there, let's go. Let's do it. All right? I don't go out to all these halls and look and see what the machatanim and now it's the two wives. So only one of them drives. I think the husband's care. So that's like the Suels. It's a sin. I'm okay if she goes. That's even that. Suel was, you know, the brother. Why would the brother take? Because that was Lavan. Lavan isn't he? That's the Lavan we know in Parshas Vayetze. You see, maybe I can get. I'll make the negotiations here. I'm going to get the lawyer's fee. I'm going to get the 10% fee for this. All right? Okay, that's Ibn Ezra. Rashi says, Bisuel, and it's a drash, because there's nothing indicating in the text that Bisuel wanted to stop these proceedings. Rashi says, oh yes, there is. It's not mentioned. So what is it? This is where Rashi doesn't say on Medrash. The Medrash says, do you see something on the board that sounds a little like Rifka's father's name? What was Bisuel's job in Aram and Harayim at the time? He was the man, this despicable practice that Rashi actually mentions in Parshas Noach for why God brought the flood. The flood came because the B'nai Elohim took the B'nos Ha'adam, whatever they wanted. What does that even mean? That's why God brought the flood. The Hamas is mentioned later. It says the B'nai Elohim took the B'nos Ha'adam b'chol asher b'charu, whatever they wanted. So Rashi cites a medrash that says this is what they did in the world at that time. Very common practice. It was common in the Middle Ages, and Christians did it to Christians. They did it to Jews too. Subastav Tess talks about it. That a local official would have the first night with every married woman. And the Jewish women were committing suicide rather than do this. They said, don't get engaged. No, we would try to get away with it. And try to... You ever hear this? There's a name for it. What's it called?
Rite of the first eaters.
Yeah, something like that. No, but there's a more fancy name for it. But okay, Rite of the First Night. You've heard of it, right? Look at the Tudor text. The Gemara talks about the Roman practice, right? The Christians were doing it to their own. It's despicable, right? So Rashi says that's what the men were doing then. It was a power play against the women, and by Ashkisu called Basar. Get close reading. Three more minutes.
I was googling the thing.
Okay, all right. Wait 3 minutes. So Rashi says, "Batishalches kol basar." All of flesh was engaging in this kind of behavior. This is why God had to destroy the world. Not just humans; they were mixing it with animals. It was a chesed that God brought a flood to these people. You want to read it that it was only a certain part of the world. The Gemara in the end of Zvachim has discussion whether it was the whole world, part of the world. It was a tsunami of the Mediterranean going 200 miles into and grabbing, putting everything back into that little slip from Europe to North Africa and bringing everything back into the water with them. However you want to understand this, fine. But Rashi says that when different tishoches kol basar, Ander Masia comes to the world. You know what Andromasia means in English? Pandemic. That man was about to be wiped out in a very, very painful way. And Hashem said, you know what? Let me just make it easy for them. I'll take them quickly. And I'll have someone bring a remnant. Where they don't behave that way. That's why they, you know, this is all now deep in drash direction, but let me get back to our point. Is that Bisuel is not there because he was told by the men of the town, you've got to do this for you. If your daughter's getting married, you've got to take her too. You can't do it to our daughters and not to your own. Now, Rashi could have discussed it, but I think that's too much for Rashi. So what do you think the Medrash says? How many people take a vote in this class? Does Besuel say, no, I can't do it to my own daughter, so they kill him? Or does Besuel say, I'm going to do it. I have to do it because it's only fair. Well, I think the answer is given away in Rashi. Okay. What?
I think A.
It's B, because who kills Besuel in Rashi? Angel. Why did Rashi have to say how he died? Why not just say Besuel suffered a heart attack? He ate too many tortillas and he suffered a heart attack. Right? Just say he died, so he wasn't there. By the end of the negotiations, why did Rashi have to say an angel killed him? Because Rashi says, you know, we have to save Rivka from this situation. A bad situation in this place, and we have to bring her to another place. Right? So all of that comes out from her brother and her mother finished the negotiations. Ibn Ezra says, of course Besuel was there. So why isn't he mentioned? He wasn't an interested party. He said, you take care of it, I'll just sign a check at the end of the day. Right? Or I'll take the gifts that he leaves behind. But he wasn't interested. And how do you know he wasn't interested? Because earlier in the story, it says, right?
Okay,
with the case,
from
my
home.
What? Sorry?
That's the case that you don't have to mention at all.
At the beginning, you can't totally disregard the father. I mean, I did show up for the initial meetings, you know. All I can work with is what's there. Why did you say, oh, that's the first strike. Why did you mention the son first? And then the next one, when it's finished, oh, come on. So okay, you're saying a stretch. That's why Rashi said this. I agree with you. Otherwise, Rashi could have said that too. Okay? Okay? Alright, so what I did today with you was to show two very different approaches to the biblical text, and it was mostly from the area of close reading, this one that I circled. Alright? And just want, it will manifest itself when you study Talmud, when you study Gemara, and you see how Rabbi Akiva looks at the Pasuk and Rabbi Shmuel looks at the Pasuk, and you'll see, wait a second, I recognize this. This one's Rashi, this one's Rashbam. Okay? And you'll see it manifesting itself often if you read the Gemara closely enough, I hope. Alright? Okay, guys. Have a great day today.